Maharaj has been a big inspiration in my life. Since I've knew him. When I first went to India when I was 22, that was like 1988, I met him there. And he, along with some other saintly people, took me at midnight to the holy Radhakund. It's like a sacred lake. And it was the appearance of this sacred lake. They say the day it appeared, but, you know, the anniversary of it. And it was such a foreign place to me, but it was filled with so much joy and kirtan and singing and laughter and excitement. I thought, who are these people? Where? I was brand new. I was newer than you guys. And I was like, what's going on here? The entire village bathes in this lake together. And it's like a very, very mystical, magical experience. And I saw the smiles on his face. I can still see that same smiles there. That smile touched my heart. And I'm happy to say that I've been connected with him ever since that magical day in my life. Thank you, Maharaj, and thank you for visiting the farm and being part of our podcast. He's been on our podcast many times, and we just love to have you here. Thank
wonderful,
you.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm also very... it is a blitz tour for me, really like a blitz, a lightning, and I'm just so relieved that I made it.
Everybody hear okay? Do we need to get closer? The back is okay?
A little bit louder, should I speak? That is not possible. That is possible. Yes, so... It is because I see one word when I think of wisdom of the sages, potentiality, great opportunity, great possibility. It is something like a virtual temple which has been created, mm-hmm. A temple in which people from all over the world participate. I know from Europe many very good people, for instance the Popovich brothers take part in the daily broadcast. These are top designers. There was a TV serial, I heard about it, Shadow and Bones or something, and they Netflix, they are called the Popovich brothers to put designs, and such people who are really out there in the society contributing to society in various forms are coming into this virtual mandir or virtual ashram where every morning the Bhagavatam is recited and unpacked into what the old wisdom could mean for us today, not only in Europe, but everywhere we meet people who are connected with this, and in this way, yeah, it's not like a temple which is local, you know, like a place in India, but it is a virtual temple where people from all over the world move in, and also people who are just sincerely searching, they somehow are directed by the internal GPS, the Paramatma in the heart, the Lord in the heart, to join that virtual community. So today, so I'm very, Raghunath always says, he's very happy to have my association over the decades. Now, yes, his hair is also slightly gray, you can see. but I feel very honored to take part in it, and I feel so happy that Raghunath and Kostuba have really made this one of their life's missions. The greater part of their life is invested in there, And it really works. It is something highly inspiring. And there, let us say, the spiritual potency can be felt. There are a lot of good efforts also, and good intentioned efforts all over the world to present spirituality. But Wisdom of the Sages is definitely one of those efforts where the spiritual energy or the spiritual reality can be felt dripping on your keyboard in your laptop, so to say. I'm trying to speak the way people speak in New York. I sometimes may not hit the right note, but yes. So I suggest we do the following. I wanted to speak a little bit about a subject matter, the art of real inner transformation. This morning's class will be, we will also do meditation and a few things, will be like introductory, and then in the afternoon I wanted to present to all of you, let us say, what I consider the main agent that brings about this transformation. If you have water and you wish the water to be transformed into fog, I don't know why someone could want that, maybe in a scientific experiment, then you need a transforming agent. Very simply said, heat that brings the water into another state, the state of vapor, water vapor. No? So if you want yourself to be transformed into a spiritually enlightened, blissful personality full of inner knowledge, then you also need a strong transforming agent. It's not heat, it is something else. So that we want to present in the afternoon. But here I want to first lay the groundwork, and I thought to do like this. I will invite my assistant Gaur Krishna to accompany me on the harmonium. Then we sing a little, yes? Then I will do my presentation, and then I would like, in the style of Wisdom of the Sages, to invite our dynamic force of Wisdom of the Sages, Raghunath, to contribute to it and give us a little. Because what I really appreciate in the two is Kostuba is able to bring the very ancient transcendental wisdom as it is found in the sacred scriptures, and he has studied it very well. He's known as a, you call these people a pandit, and Raghunath knows how to bring all this into our experience and use. That's why the two are a good combination. Kostuba, I wanted to call on Raghunath for this presentation, and in the afternoon you. I think then it's not too many contributors, and it's a clear presentation.
Whenever you feel it's best.
Good. Then, but for now, we need your accomplished medanga playing.
Who's better? He's better.
Out of humility, you're saying, or
out of devotion?
No, you have to decide. I don't know.
He really needs to work on the player.
You are what?
I think we're both pretty.
Same level.
Right. We're both pretty bad. We can keep beats, though. And we can.
Or I think, well, what? Because he's already here, and it will be for sure not too soft. It will be loud enough.
Yeah. We'll do it in the after one, and then we can have a vote.
All right, so let's give Raghunath the medallion. Do you know how to sit here? You don't know.
Oh,
utter the sound of the mantra as you would do when you enter a train. Let the mantra carry you, but make sure that you're really in there, not with your mind all over the place, but really in there, and you will see how the Vastu Shakti, the inner Shakti of the mantra, will carry you very far sometimes. We sing.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
really, Medanga is okay. See, Medanga playing, the most important is timing. You can know a multitude of rhythms, but if you're not on the beat, then it is a disturbance, the Medanga. But you were very congratulations. There's a future in the Medanga world for you. Good. So let me just put this all in place. I will from time to time refer to my notes. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskajare Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Govaktavinda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
All of us again, please.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
My dear everyone, I became interested in the subject matter of spiritual transformation one evening when my father told us boys a story which on first hearing it makes you very sad, but on again thinking about it makes you very hopeful. My father had been part in the Nazi regime of Adolf Hitler and was unfortunately part of many atrocities. One of them, the partial extinction of a whole civilization, or how do you call this, the Jewish population. And he told us on that evening something that started really my interest in the subject. He had seen that a group of these people who were condemned to die in the gas chambers of Auschwitz, they were marching into the chambers while singing. He was very, very amazed. Who sings when he goes to die? And upon closer investigation, he saw that in the room where they undressed, that was done before they were herded into these chambers, there were drawings on the walls which were not there before. They had been drawn by them, drawings of butterflies rising. Then he asked more, and he had to apply pressure and to not make the story gruesome. I will not speak of the pressure, which is known as torture now.
He wanted to extract the secret of these people. And one inmate told finally that these are people who believe that with death they move on, and if they what they take with them from this world is certainly not wealth, it's certainly not even the body, nothing. They leave all of that behind, but they take with them whatever spiritual realization they have, and in this way they are like caterpillars they see themselves as caterpillars who become the queen of Africa. That's name of a butterfly, or the monarch of Africa if it's a male of that species. So when my father had heard this, his allegiance to the Nazi crumbled down, and he was moved so much that he went on his spiritual quest, so to say. Change is possible, otherwise there would not be any butterflies. Or transformation is possible, and the butterfly therefore transculturally has become a symbol of, you know, a being who is really earthbound, and he eats often decomposed leaves, who then by a certain process turns into the most beautiful creature who lives by drinking nectar, flower nectar, and so on. So in spiritual life, this symbol is also there in spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada quotes this analogy in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, by absorbing our mind in the spiritual reality of Krishna, we can become take on eternal body in which we directly associate with God. That's a project, you know. And then he says, just like the butterfly who becomes. Just like the caterpillar who becomes a butterfly. I want to talk today about the dynamics of change, which is necessary that we come to our fullest spiritual potential in Krishna consciousness, also in general. And in the afternoon, I want to share with you how you can also become butterflies or fully realized enlightened people. It's a journey. It may not have, but journeys are fascinating. The life is not so boring. First of all, look at the caterpillar. When the caterpillar becomes the monarch of Africa, I would love to show you picture of this butterfly. He has to, in some sense, become what he already is. He grows not into something unusual. He doesn't become a giraffe, for instance, but he becomes what he, in a sense, is already. Just like a tree which evolves from a seed becomes what he is already. And so when you take the process of spiritual transformation, you're not introducing something external, something from outside, but you actually become what you are already. That's very important. What we hear in wisdom of the sages is not just a nice cultural presentation of a different spiritual culture. There are spiritual principles which I think I have been in a few and listened to Wisdom of the Sages broadcast. There are principles that always work if you apply them to help you to become who you really are at the moment you are not. We have all adopted in this world a phantom identity, no? A false ego. Now, in the process of becoming who you are in your spiritual life, you need to know the space which you will enter. It is, as you will now listen to the space, it is something quite interesting. It is the state where you no longer do the old things or think the old concepts, but you have not yet attained your full realization. It's something in between. The old you is not what you want to live by, the old version of you, let's say it like this, no. But you have not yet become fully enlivened persons. And this stage, I couldn't describe it better. I will read it from one of my notes. It was described by someone called Richard Rohr. Some of you might know. And he says it's so nice. Do I have your full attention, please? Yes. No? Yes?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The space is where we are betwixt and between the familiar and the completely unknown. Oh, you all are familiar with the ways of living in America, and now you are on your spiritual journey, and you are not yet fully familiar with the ways of the spiritual dimension. So we are betwixt and between. I never heard this word betwixt before. Betwixt and between the familiar and the completely unknown. There alone is our old world left behind. While we are not yet sure of the new existence. I remember when Raghunath on that evening finally mustered up all his courage to dive into this deep lake without knowing what would lurk inside the dark waters. He was leaving the known world. He would not have done that. And there were, you know, there were about a few thousand people trying to get at the same time into this lake, no? So he left, and he was not sure of the new existence. I remember his expressive eyes were roaming back and forth. That's a good space where genuine newness can begin. Get there often and stay as long as you can by whatever means possible. This liminal space, no, is the sacred space where the old world is able to fall apart or fall away, or New York language where you can dump it, and a bigger world is really revealed. You come from the small mind into the vast, expansive understanding. If we don't encounter this liminal space in our lives, we start idealizing normalcy. Very dangerous to idealize the normal life and make it into something, wow, that's really advancement. That's really cool. That's really the goal of my life, to just have this amazing house with a good swimming pool and nice air conditioned and enough eatables in the refrigerator and so on. If we don't if we don't get into this space where we leave the known behind and are ready to and open ourselves to enter into the spiritual life, we are really idealizing normalcy. Perhaps you know some people who are idealizing normalcy. Perhaps you are sometimes also doing that. No? The threshold between this old and the new, the threshold is God's waiting room, where we are taught openness and patience as we come to expect an appointment with the divine doctor. My dear everyone, if you really enter this full understanding that we live now in a dreamlike world. You have heard it many times, I think, on the Wisdom of the Sages, or not the real world. And there is a totally categorically different spiritual world waiting. Wow, this is something, you know. But at the moment, we are in an in-between state. We are half dreaming, but starting to feel an inkling of the need to awaken. And yes, in that space, we come to expect an appointment or a revelation that confirms us. And I believe all of you have been encouraged by certain revelations. Perhaps the revelation came during the podcast, when you suddenly got an insight that seemed to open your understanding to totally new ideas. Perhaps your revelation came when you were alone at a beach somewhere, and all of a sudden you realized the force, the energy which keeps everything together and which is the first manifestation of God, or you got a divine intuition in the heart, you heard that voice which never errs, that is the super soul in the heart, and you followed it, and you it was phenomenal what you realized, no? We all have these moments, these magical moments where we feel that a little of the spiritual reality just sips through into our world and illuminates it, if even for a moment, so that our life is no longer the same. We are now equipped with a journey, a longing for more of these experiences. Now this sacred space in the heart, where new spiritual discoveries, or let us say, revelations can take place, I spoke about this yesterday, is carefully guarded by what we say is ahankara, the false ego. This false ego works in three capacities. The concept of I, that is my core concept of who I am. The concept of me, that's how I express it, my name, my form. In America, we would say my style, and so on. And then there is also mine, the feeling that I possess this, I own this car, or I own this responsibility over these people, what I call my family, my car, my country, and so on. Now, as you enter into a genuine spiritual process, there will be a transformation of I, me, and mine. From the illusory I, you will understand, no, I'm not all of this. I am a part of God. Nectar. You will have an enlightened concept of me. These are not important for me any longer. I told today when we met Raghunath and Kostuba, they were friends. We want to know, of course, what's up in your life. What is? And I said, I want to become stop being a human doing. I want to become a human being, resting in spiritual understanding. No, and then when I have this, I express myself totally different. And mine. I'm sorry, getting a little enthusiastic here. I will not relate to worldly possessions in a way. I will, as a materialist does. I will see they are given to me so that I can use them for something greater, and so on. So in other words, transformation has to happen for this little guy who guards the door to my sacred space, the ego. The ego never wants change. The ego wants to remain in charge. And when I hear something and the ego doesn't like it, I discard it. I stop entering into a spiritual, the unknown space, because my ego doesn't allow it. It says nonsense. I think Dhanudar Maharaj and myself talked about you, Raghunath, when you made that dive into the dark unknown lake at 12 o'clock at midnight. You had not listened to the God. Oh no, this is impossible. This is not what we do in my culture. And so on. And dove right into it. Yeah. Initially, I wanted to give you an example of transformation. When transformation is going to take place, when you will need to enter the liminal space, the in-between state, and you need to be patient. You need to remain enthusiastic, to give your full effort, but you also need to be patient. My spiritual master spoke about the new spiritualist with an analogy of a girl who is married, and then after the first night, she says, well, where's the baby? I thought the baby comes like this. We speak of innocent Indian brides, you know, not well-experienced Americans. So then her father said, no, it takes multiple activities like this, like you did in the first night, and also multiple months it takes. It doesn't just come this moment. It has the seed has to enter and mix with the ovum, and then inside of you the baby has to grow, and all of this. No, you know better than me. So spiritual life remains and needs enthusiasm, but also patience. Let it grow inside. Let it germinate inside. Let it grow. Don't be so fast. I said to the devotees, when I came to America this time, I was shocked to see this poster where it said, where one hospital wanted to get clients with the following advertisement. We perform surgery on your heart attack, or stroke, it was a stroke, 10 times faster than any other clinic. For me, it was, I don't care how fast it is, I care how good it is. But everyone is so, not even when the stroke, you're so busy, it has to be 10 times faster than your neighbor, so that you can make a quick dollar perhaps or so. This is the rat race civilization. Now, what do you think about when you enter the liminal space? First of all, can you understand what I'm hinting at? Is it David was in the lecture yesterday? You know, so have you also experienced this space where you might feel slightly uncomfortable? You have not yet gained the promised spiritual insights. And you have denied so many other things. You have given up so many other appointments, and not yet so much has come to you. This is a scary space. The mystics speak of the dark night of the soul. It can be a scary space when you are so time-driven, and so on. In this space, it's very important to have sangha, association, because it is in sangha, in association, that something of the spirit comes through you. It is said that there are various forms of association. For instance, when a very lust-driven man is in the airplane and a very lust-driven lady, the lady of the flesh, comes into the airplane, immediately there is a subtle connection. I have seen with my own eyes in Atlanta. I was flying from Atlanta to somewhere in Russia, Moscow, and there was, this man in needle striped suit, and then this lady entered who smelled like an entire perfume shop. they were nearby. I could see them, and as they were sitting next to themselves, they became highly nervous, first of all, and then. You have seen this many times. Then some communication started, and so on. Where have they communicated? The communication takes place non-verbally on the lower chakras. Have you ever been in a situation where you meet someone and he is immediately, or she is immediately sympathetic to you, but not in that Atlanta way, but in what a kind, good person. I would love to see that an opportunity arises where we can exchange ideas. No? Mm. Have you had this? Yes. Yes. I saw yesterday a person whom I had seen perhaps 10 years ago, and already at that first meeting 10 years, I thought it would be nice if we could talk about spiritual things, but there was no opportunity. So when you have association with devotees or with spiritually advanced people, there is a transference of spiritual energy taking place, even if not even a word has been exchanged. The Indian idea of darshan is you just go to the and be next to the sadhu. You don't ask him millions of complicated questions. You just stay and perhaps render some service, bring some fruits or so, and then in his association there is an transferal of spiritual energy. Therefore, Ramanujacharya advises us on Sangha. When no process works for you, there is one process which will always work. Get yourself into the association of saintly people. There's a poem about this. Sit at their feet, drink every word thirstily, and when the cup of your heart is full and you drink from it, so you will be fully intoxicated and see Krishna everywhere. Wonderful, no?
Mm-hmm. So, Who said that?
Kabir. Mm-hmm. Kabir writes these mystical poems, mm-hmm. which are very, for instance, he said, I am a weaver. I am a simple weaver. I am a weaver of your name. The fabric which I weave is my life. It's pervaded by your sacred name. Kabir, those who like poets. When I'm with Gauravani, there's one devotee, and we just exchange poems back and forth. Poems back and forth. Or, if you like, you seem to like poetry, if you wish to advance, seek those who fan your flames. Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. Sangha. Yeah, association. And this is a transrational process. Meaning, what is there in realization in the heart of the genuine devotee? It will come to you. The words are only, let us say, what is in homeopathy, either water or this mineral, or this tablet, which is this milk, sugar, you know. Mm.
Placebo.
Yeah. No, in homeopathy you have information that is carried either by water or by some other. These little pills which are not medical, they're just carrying. So the words of the sadhu are like this. They carry what is in his heart. No? And therefore, sangha makes so much, helps us so much when we are in that liminal space where we are no longer that, but not yet that. Sangha, then the next thing I would like to point out to you, let's be a little practical, is Shastra, the spiritual scriptures. Have you seen, when you are in these podcasts and the scriptures are, the Bhagavatam is narrated. As you listen to the subject matters, something seems to come into your heart that was not there before. Perhaps a determination, perhaps an inner strength, where you say, I'm going to say that person who's harmful to my development, I'm going to say, eat your apples somewhere else. You know, inner strength. Trying to speak in a New York relevant way. that comes when you hear this, the concept of the scriptures. It's not just, this is transrational. We speak about spiritual, the spiritual current which flows. The next point I would like to mention is the 4S. Seva, do service, selfless service. In selfless service, you are brought to the level where you put your ego on the parking place. No, we have no time for you. I'm now doing something for the benefit of Krishna or the benefit of the devotees. I have heard that here on the Super Soul Forum there are seva weekends, no? Where we can do things. That's not just a way to have workers, unpaid workers. Seva is in our benefit because we develop our spiritual identity of a servant like this, and in an almost jumpstart way, you know, when a car doesn't want to work or doesn't work, you have to push it, and then. But at some time, it begins to work and does it automatically. So sometimes you may have to convince yourself to do the selfless service. But if you do this, after some time, something spiritual in you catches on and the car starts to run. You start to move. Seva. And then comes the most important thing, which might be the next level for some of you. It is sadhana, or spiritual practice. My dear everyone, through spiritual practice, what you do now in your spiritual practice is what you become later. What you do now in your spiritual practice is what you grow into. You can't cheat on sadhana. You have to have that time in your life where you are doing spiritual practice, even though no one sees you doing it. It's what you do in the time when you have alone time with Krishna, chanting, reading on your own. There are many sadhanas which you can do. And as you do it, you will grow into this. I was recently a guest to a Zoom show, Zoom something, the spiritual experiences of a lifelong monk. And I just wanted to prepare some sessions. And I sat in my in Germany, where I stay. Raghunath and Kostuba have honored us in our little ashram by the lake. It stayed with us. It's a wonderful time. But I stayed in that room, which you know, which can open to the temple room, but at the writing table. And I was just reflecting. I'm now 50 years doing this. And I have genuinely changed. Believe it or not, I was for 1 year a street fighter. I know martial arts of the deadly kind. But we didn't kill. Don't worry. And I find in my heart now no aggression. It has changed. You need to be, and I was don't even want to remember that dark chapter of my life. But that has changed; it's gone. I can tell you other things which have really changed in terms of, I lost personal ambition to, not completely. I'm used this inclination which is there in this body and mind to try to be helpful in building projects. But I have recently seen when there was one project completed which took a lot of financial resources and everyone praised me, I thought, I really don't identify with this. I was just used as an instrument, and I was getting restless when the praises came upon each other. Previously, I would have grabbed it. Oh, finally, someone sees my worth. You know, but no, that is, it's things really change. But it comes by spiritual practice. And there's a verse, Bhakti Parishanu Bhavo. I will say it in English immediately. Devotion, direct experience of Krishna, and relief from the desire to enjoy this world come automatically to someone who practices bhakti, practices, spiritual practice, no? And comparison or analogy is given. This happens automatically on the bhakti path, just like someone who eats feels immediately satisfaction, then nourishment, and finally he is no longer hungry. No? He says, "Take it. I'm all right." So this is an experience. The path of bhakti needs to be practiced, and in this way you quickly and surely and safely come through the liminal space, that not yet space, no, of your spiritual life. That's the. These other things are very helpful. Sangha. Let us see what were the four things. Do you remember the first one? I said it.
Sangha.
Sangha. Is, what does it mean in English?
Association.
With anyone?
The saintly people.
Saintly people. Then?
Shastra.
Shastra. That is the spiritual scriptures. Then?
Seva.
And finally, sadhana. Yes. And this is a very, very, it's a simple formula. And my request or my impulse to you, I want to give an impulse here, is try to please see what type of sadhana works for you. It shouldn't be an austerity where you force yourself into something. Is this, I keep on looking, are you Henry? Yeah. My driver G, isn't it? Yes, yeah, so Henry. We will talk. I kept on. My far seeing is limited due to old age. I don't see so well in the distance. Henry drove me and so safely and quickly. And we had pleasant philosophical exchanges. That was yes. So yes, that sadhana, please take it from a light. Yes, I'm doing this 50 years, and on the day of reflection I understand everything which has come to me in terms of transformation is due to that sadhana, that spiritual practice. And those who live with me, they know I will not, rarely will I eat anything, I will not do anything in the day unless I have completed my particular spiritual practice. And I have now a very strong desire to move my spiritual life in one area, and I know I need to now already walk in that area in the form of a practice which is related to that area and that in the spiritual life, and it brings me there. So really, transformation remains an intellectual ball game unless you come and say, okay, what practice can I do now which is relevant to my present state? And then be a little bit determined there. And that will help you to come from the caterpillar into an African queen or African monarch and so on. Spiritual practice also invokes a stream of mercy which will carry you. Krishna will think, oh, that person is quite serious, he takes it sincere. Do you know from where the word sincerity comes? It comes from the Roman word sincera, which means without wax. When the Roman Empire prospered, everyone of the who was in the army wanted to build a house from white marble, either in Rome or nearby. And the marble industry blossomed and flourished, and they started to cheat like all businesses. They put wax on marble blocks that were not totally marble. They had some blemish here, some like a caries, a written tooth here. You know, they were, had some broken pieces, but they covered it up with wax, and they sold it to a high price. This was good. This worked good until the summer came, and all the wax melted and dripped down, and the houses, which looked so beautiful before, were exposed as very medium class houses. So the Roman Senate met on this. Amongst they met amongst many subjects, but that was one subject, and they said, "Sine sera, no vox can be used in the marble industry any longer. Otherwise, this is cheating." So sincerity means you have to get rid of facades, you have to get rid of the external things, you have to be through and through. Marble or determined, and this sincerity really can be applied best on the sadhana, the spiritual practice. Please talk with your mentors, Kostuba, Raghunath, about this, what you can do. They all have their sadhanas, the sadhana which no one sees, and so on. I remember when Raghunath was our guest, we heard up there in the room where he stayed, cling, 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 cling. He did a regular puja. He said, "Oh, this is a good man." No one saw it, not even the wisdom of the sages broadcast saw it. It's this what you do when you have, when you relate to the one with a thousand names, no? With Krishna, no? Yes. All right. Summary. Become who you are, or this process of spiritual growth and evolvement is not something foreign. It means to grow into that which is already there. While you do this, you will have to pass through a zone of dislodging from some habits which are no longer favorable to you and enter the liminal space. This space becomes an ecstatic space and not a space where you all the time fight with your old ego and your old habits. When you fill it, this space, and make it a blessed space with Sangha, Shastra, Seva and you know everything, and it becomes a blissful space, and then you will see how you invoke divine energies. It's called the Chladi, Bhakti Shakti. You will invoke, and this Shakti will work much more, much stronger than any, let us say, man-made efforts. Or lady-made efforts. And my takeaway is, my what I want to give to you today is, think about the spiritual practice you do now, and think about how you can improve it, make it regular, make it perhaps something like a habit, no? That you that comes automatic to you. And you will see miracles unfold in your life. No, those who try to transform and they come to this liminal space, they lose their patience because they are always in this. Let us have a little play with words. There was a word. I will find it in a sec. Yes. They are always in the preliminary. Preliminary? Mm-hmm. They're liminal, no? They were always in the not yet. And they go to one retreat after another, one thing after the other, hoping that it comes from outside one day, but it comes from inside when you do your spiritual practice. So that was your introductory class by a person who spoke more German than English to you. I remember when Viktor Frankl he gave his lecture. I will speak now German with a little English accent to you. He also was not so confident with his language skills. And I want to turn to our Raghunath Prabhu. Raghunath, does something come to your mind as you hear this, which you would like to let your people know?
We're surrounded by...
Yeah, oh yeah. Raghunath, we will put a microphone on you. Mm-hmm.
Let's all name those again.
Seva,
Sangha,
Shastra, Seva, Sadhana.
First one.
Sangha.
We become like the company we keep. When we become great at something, hang out with people who are great at it. People that sort of make you stretch more than you usually stretch. And from that, you start to inquire. And it just comes natural. He's like, well, how do you do that? This isn't anything, any material thing as well. But the same is with spiritual things. And when you inquire, then they start to give you answers, and they say, well, you gotta regulate your life better. You want to become an Olympic swimmer, then before you go to school in the morning, you gotta start swimming. And when you get back from school, I know there's a lot of things going on after school, you can't do any of that stuff. It's interesting because if I was going for the Olympics, you'd be like, my Raghunath is so determined. You know, look at him. He's given up that. He's given up this. He's not hanging out with his friends on the weekends. Right? If I wanted to be a great basketball player, look at Raghunath. He's practicing his layups. He's shooting from the top of the key. He'll do 100 shots again and again and again until he gets expert at his foul shots. If I want to be an artist, I'll just like paint and paint and paint. Look at it. Look at his dedication. You do it within spirituality, you're like a weirdo and a nut. But it's the same type of focus you need. It's just that it's so foreign because there's a payoff in basketball. There's a payoff with art. There's a payoff. There's no material payoff oftentimes with spiritual things. So a material mind, they don't get you. You're ungettable. They can't figure you out. Why? Why are you going to do that? Are you going to go to India again? You sit around through these beads like a nutcase. They don't get it. It doesn't make sense to them. You want to go in a room, close the door behind you, ring a little bell. What do you got? What are you ringing a bell to? Oh, my stones. It makes no material sense. You know, what we do in our spiritual life. Even the most simple things. Where are you going this weekend? We're going to do seva. What's seva? Work. What? You're going to, on your weekend, you're going to work? Yeah. So what we're approaching is the opposite of what everybody else wants. So prepare yourself for pushback from the people that are near and dear to you. Because it makes no sense. In the material mind. And so we're asked to see everything through a spiritual lens. It does make sense through a spiritual mind. And a lot of you already have sort of like, you know what? This doesn't work for me anymore. Maybe it was a very successful career that some people have seen people walk away from. It wasn't... I climbed a ladder of success only to realize the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall. Ever climb that ladder? Really hard. you climb it. You had to go to school for it, and that cost a lot of money. And then you had to lecture, cut all these things out, and you finally made it to that top. I know this because as a yoga teacher, you deal with people who've at that top, and they're like, I don't even want to be up here. All the accoutrements also of material success. What do you do with those? It's like, who cares? We get to this point in spiritual life where we just sort of goes, who cares? Who cares about this? I've worked so hard so I can have the newest iPhone. Who cares? The very thing that's driving me insane, this iPhone. I worked so hard so I can get the newest vehicle. Who cares? I'm in more anxiety than I'm going to get a scratch on this newest vehicle. When I had that clunker, I didn't care that much. So the very thing, it's almost like a baited hook, material life. The very thing I'm attracted to is a thing that's like sort of hooking me. It was the most impressive thing for me as a young man. So I tell a story, it's pretty embarrassing. If you don't mind me sharing it, a humiliating story. What do you call it? You know, when I did music as a young man before I got into bhakti, you know, I was 22. I didn't have tons of money, but I saved like $25,000. So for me, that was like more money than I've ever had, you know, at 22. But at the same time, I knew I needed God in my life. But I thought, you know, hey, I'm going to go to India, and I'm sure there's going to be gurus out there that are going to want my money. Because that's my mentality. Like, everybody's out to get me. I was a New Yorker, so that's how New Yorkers think. We're like, we don't trust anybody. If someone says hi to you in New York, hey, how are you? You're like, what do you want? If you have children and you grew up in New York, you say, look at the ground. Don't look at anybody. Grew up in the subway, don't look at anyone. I had my little kids in New York when they were little, so you know, you don't look at people in New York. You just train to look away at people. So I was went to India, and that was my first concept. Someone's going to try to get my money out of me. And then when I got to India, I started to live with the monks and saw how they lived. And their lives weren't easy, because you've got to go to bed really early, like 8:30, no. 8 o'clock. You know, when you're 20... Now we all get it. We're in our 50s. We get it. Yeah, 8:30 is great. But when you're 22, you're like, are you guys kidding? Come on! But then, and you wake up early. They wake up. No matter how early you wake up in India, there's someone up ahead of you. There's someone up doing something spiritual before you got up. And it's not like there was like this trophy bathroom you'd go to. It was like a jailhouse bathroom with like a pipe out of the wall with freezing water in the winter and hot water in the summer. There's like no relief. Sometimes the lights would go out and they'd just be out, and you're like taking a shower in pitch black, you know, looking for the soap, looking for, now I gotta go to that black toilet closet. My point was, there was no like material upside there. Then you got to go to the morning prayer, which is nice. I like the morning prayer. You go there, you sing songs early in the morning. I thought that was a good thing. But it's freezing. And there's no heat anywhere. And we're walking on marble barefoot. It was like sort of like, unless you wore like socks, and you were sort of sock shamed. And so, yeah, I didn't see any like material pleasure there, but I did notice for people with nothing, I couldn't understand why they were so happy. Mm-hmm. With people with nothing, waking up early, going to bed early. It's not like they had closets of robes to wear. Like, I'm going to wear this color of robe today. It was just like, you get two robes. That's it. You get two robes. Otherwise, nothing. I was trying to think, where do I get a pleasure from? You know, you're not going out into restaurants. You just go eating in the ashram with everybody else. You know, no sex. You're a monk. You know, yeah, no, nothing.
And I realized, like, these guys don't want my money. I've got nothing to offer these people. I go, I want what they have. How do you be happy with nothing? How can you be happy with nothing? If I could figure that out, that would be amazing. Because everybody I've seen is trying to work to get something just to become what they already have with nothing. And that sort of like became my quest. And I think it prepared me to like deal with, okay, I'm having kids, having a house, having family, because then the question is, how can you maintain that type of happiness of nothing but have something? Because if you lean into the things that I have, it was already now implanted in your mind, like, you're going to lose all those things, guy. Don't you understand? You don't own any of those kids. You don't own those kids. You don't own that car. Don't get too attached to that car. That car's going down. Mm-hmm. Right? It's all going to go south. There's no positive material experience going to happen. It can go up, but it's all going down. And so understanding that at that young age, it sort of like became something I just got to carry with me. So that, and that was like also the gift of the association. They start to train you how to think again. And if you don't get trained how to think consciously, you get trained unconsciously. Because people are always trying to sell you something. And they'll say, yeah, you just go here and you'll be happy, or go there and you'll be happy. Go there. And it's this quest to take the bait of material existence. So I think it's a nice little experiment. How to find joy with nothing. And how to find joy. And so, you know, different people have their meditational practice. In this tradition, ours is through sound. And that's why a lot of our work is just to sit here and chant. And what are we chanting? Same old thing. Same old melody. Oftentimes the same old melody. Just keep it at the, and that's sort of like when the magic happens. Because I remember going to my first kirtan. I was like, okay, pretty good. Cultural experience here. You know, Indian songs, okay. Indian music. And then sort of like after a while, 5 minutes go by, 10 minutes go by, and sort of, okay, pretty good. Yeah, nice. I'm getting into it. People are nodding their heads. One lady's like in bliss. You know, I'm just like trying to experience it. But then after a while, it sort of like gets a little boring. Okay, can we mix it up? Mix it up. Change it. Go into Jaya. Anything. Go faster. Go slower. Change the mantra. There's thousands of mantras. Can we change it up? That's when the magic happens, though. When you can just stay steady. The magic happens when you sort of want to come out of it. If you can just stay and hear the sounds. And then it's sort of like it's not there for your enjoyment either. You're singing for Krishna's enjoyment. And that's this when the sound starts to really transform. And Maharaj was saying to me too, like about this human being and human doing. Sometimes you don't have to explain this to your relatives or your loved ones. Or sometimes you just have to just hear the sacred sound yourself and you become transformed. And that's the most inspirational thing you can do to your loved ones or your friends or your family and stuff like that, is not to preach or teach them anything, but that human doing, that human being, just being God conscious and having it shift you and transform you and butterfly you. That people notice something's different now. Because I remember what they used to be like, and they're not like that anymore. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's a beautiful thing because sometimes we don't notice it in ourselves because we're sort of, maybe the transformation is slow. But if you look back to where you were 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 30 years ago, and you realize, oh, I had different desires, I had different hopes, I had different dreams, I treated people differently, and I treated myself differently. That you see, it actually works.
and actually transforms you. And a nice thing to think is, like, where do I want to be in 5 years from now? What do I have to embrace? And what do I have to let go of? 5 years from now happens very quick, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you become older, it's really like...
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Facebook does those things. Here's a picture of you 8 years ago. You're like, oh, God. What the hell happened to me in these 8 years that I look like this now? Just throw this thing on your... But it's true. We don't sort of see it ourselves. Sometimes even the kids quicker. But actually, it's really going by fast. And then you get to this point, like my mother. Your father recently died.
Yes.
When was that?
In December last year.
Wow.
How old is he?
96.
Wow. 96. Yeah, my mom's 96 this year, too.
90, yeah?
Yeah.
Is she hale, like, and hearty?
She's pretty hearty. She's like, I have no aches and pains. But I will say, she's like, all my friends are dead. All of my friends. She's like, I have to start hanging out with younger people in their 80s. So it is sort of, there is an interesting thing. There's like an urgency, but it doesn't seem so urgent. So I have to keep focusing on the urgency of my spiritual life, because it's so easy to get diverted. And then as you grow older, your spiritual life becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And your material life becomes sadder and sadder and sadder. So I'm happy to... I personally am sort of like excited to, like, so, okay, where am I going to take this? Where do I want to be in 5 years now? I always like to goals, spiritual goal setting. It's a nice way to look at spiritual bucket lists. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this, I want to be here, I want to be at this place. And just that desire to be at that place is a beautiful thing. That itself starts to shift things. Anybody have any questions for Maharaj? Is it okay for questions?
Thank you for your... Can you see how our Raghunath always makes things very relevant to a contemporary... people. That is, Yes, let us churn a little the subject matter. Yes. We can change this. Let us churn the subject matter. What do you think about all this? The spiritual journey, adopting a spiritual practice in all sincerity.
I actually have a question.
Yes. Mm.
How? What are the signposts? Like, I'm sure they could be anything. Like, to know where you are in relationship to, on your spiritual path. Mm-hmm. Like, how can one tell where they are?
This was a question which we asked our spiritual master. We had been coming from various backgrounds, and after something like 5 years, we wanted to know: are there some signposts which tell us where we are? Almost like driving in a car and you want to see, okay, New York only now 15 kilometers or do you miles yeah, miles, and Boston this way and so on. There are signposts in Bhakti, various signposts, but one is, do you feel your devotion for your feelings for Krishna increase? Mm. That is then the other. Have you already made an experience in your spiritual life? That's not just theory, but it's an experience. And then comes something which we sometimes shy away to even look there if our spiritual experiences are less. Do you take some distance to material things or ways? Like I always say this in Germany, when someone goes to I'm requested sometimes to speak also in yoga studios, but I say when you go to the yoga studio, the yoga practice, and then you come home and you kick your little dog who is before the door because you couldn't make that one bow properly or that one posture properly, it means your heart has not really changed. So we must also observe, the change of heart manifests in attraction to the spiritual and detachment from the material. And when we see we are still so attached, I think all of us struggle with this. We are on the spiritual path, and then we are overwhelmed all of a sudden with old patterns of thinking, old attachments, or we feel totally disturbed because what did he really mean when he sent me that WhatsApp message with that one word, interested? Question mark? What did he mean? And it haunts us. and so on. Please listen carefully. This is what I have learned. When we see that the material thoughts and the material anxieties and worries and cravings are just overwhelming us, step back a moment. Just step back and come to the place where you understand, actually, I'm inside. I'm the life inside. I'm the soul inside. I'm part and parcel of, I'm belonging to, I'm a part of God. So when you allow yourself to enter into that connection, it's almost as if you send the struggling spark back into the fire. It gets energy. So this simple meditation to step back, or the simple step, and then step into the presence of God, of Krishna, will energize you. And when you then look upon the so-called problem, you understand it's Western luxury. This problem. It is not so difficult. I just make something up of it. With the vision of eternity, or with a spiritual vision, these small things are appearing to be like peanuts.
Thank you.
Shifting the perspective, that is so important and so helpful. My pleasure. Yes. Anyone else of you totally inspired spiritual people? Yes, Kostuba.
Thank you, Maharaj. So you spoke, I really loved the way that you frame things, and it gets you thinking about things you've been hearing about for so many years, but then in a new way, in a relevant way. And you're talking about how we go from this caterpillar stage, and then there's the butterfly. And there's that space in between that can seem very long or very lonely, or is anything happening, or the thing is growing, I don't know. And it occurred to me that, you know, there are a lot of things that may come along while you're in that space. To divert you, maybe, to slow you down or make you less focused. Maybe you think, oh, I am a butterfly already. People begin to look at me like, oh, look, he's flying, or, you know, he's got some wings, you know, but they're not the real thing yet, you know. Something's eating away, eroding your determination to get to that point. Yeah. And our whole philosophy speaks a lot about contentment as being a necessary part of yoga. That's another, you know, that we get some tools. You know, oh, I can handle when difficult things happen in life. I'm okay now. I've learned to see it in a perspective, my medical. But it does seem like that goal to become the caterpillar is so
high.
It's such an incredible the achievement of what life is all about.
Yeah.
That it's going to take some dissatisfaction to get there. Like, there's got to be some intensity to that dissatisfaction. And sometimes, like, you and I have been fortunate, you've taken me to places where we see, like, about St. Francis. And it seems like with some of these saints, the dissatisfaction is very intense. Almost it looks like that person has lost their mind.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they want it so badly that it, Raghunath was saying that the person looks crazy. Right? Mm-hmm. I was wondering, is there a healthy... Let's say I've come to terms, maybe I shouldn't have come to terms with, but like, I'm not that person, I can't imitate that person. But is there some healthy kind of dissatisfaction, you know, that a normal person, a normal practitioner might have? How would that look? That would keep us moving forward, keep us always wanting that goal, not forgetting that we don't have it and we want it and we want it badly. What does that dissatisfaction look like?
I really think both must be there. There must be should we maybe have a little oxygen in here? Yes, if we open the doors. When we... because I see you zoning out. the lack of oxygen. Thank you, David. Thank you, and our rocket-like Maraji Kaylee. Right? She ran so fast and so good. your question is a very sincere question. I can hear it is a personal question almost. In spiritual life, I believe because it's so categorically different, it's so special, let's say like this, you sometimes almost have to move in paradoxes. Mm. That is, I'm content and I'm full of longing. That doesn't go together in a material mind, you know. But that you're content with what has been given to you already, and you're full of longing, what is the possibility in front of you? I think sometimes when we isolate only one spiritual feeling that is of longing, we come into difficulty. For instance, there is in the Vaishnava tradition, there is a form of bhakti, it just means it's viraha bhakti. You feel separated, and you don't think that's all right. In material life, oh, I'm not so advanced. Oh, cheek. My neighbor is also riding a dead horse, just like me. So, no problem. We are on two dead horses in our lives. In viraha bhakti, you begin to understand, my God, I'm actually part of you. I wish to make this separation, but I want to make this connection again. And you, but at the same time, when you only think of so you are in the separation mood. At the same time, we hear that someone who feels separation feels union already. When you are thinking mentally with intensity, oh Krishna, where are you, where are you, where are you? In a mystical way, you are together with him. Mm. Is this paradoxical? Mm. I could give you a few more paradoxes, but because I see you are struggling with tiredness, when did are you sleep deprived or what is the no need of many examples of the thing, but let's just be very firm here. Spiritual life is something so wonderful, it can't be explained only with material examples. No, it is categorically different. So I want to translate this now. Try to speak like Raghunath. I'm the most happy person that I'm in bhakti, and I'm grateful for what was given to me, and I know there are so many wonderful levels just waiting for me, and I long, and I'm also sad that I'm a slow mover. You know, like this. It is paradoxical. So, but you know, without appreciating this longing and this humility and all this self-deprecation thing can become and grow out into an inferior complex, inferiority complex that might need therapeutical treatment, you know, or therapeutical attention. You have to know all these things. Good. Good, my dear everyone. How should we end the session? Should we sing a little? Yeah. That was a good idea. Good.